You are listening to the Punk News Podcast. We got a little bit of mail. Podcast at punknews.org. I'm going to read that next week. We haven't given out the email address for a while, but of course, you can always use that podcast at punknews.org. This is features editor John Gentile, and I'm here with co-head editor and more. What's happening? What's going on?
Hey, I'm excited to hear we have mail. We haven't had mail for a while.
Indeed.
I'm wondering what we're going to have.
I'm saving it till next week. Also, I was on last week because I was at Summer Soiree 8. So Em and Sam are on that episode's up right now. You should always check it out. I love Em and Sam episodes. A little bit of a different vibe than a John and Em or John, Em and Sam episodes, which I dig a lot. I do dig how the Punk News podcast, the episodes themselves are different depending on who's on. You know what I mean? It's not always the exact same format or the exact same style. So definitely check that on out. I had something else to mention. A bunch coming up at Punk News. September 6th, Philly Record Freak Out in Philly. I got to say, Em, Punk News is a happening place. We've got a lot of events happening anymore. A lot of events.
So many.
Also,
it's good to see.
I'm going to announce this week on October 18, Danbert of Chumbawamba, Universal Girlfriend, and At Night. Em, do you know who Universal Girlfriend is?
I do not know. Who
is Universal Girlfriend is the brand new supergroup. Supergroup. Marissa Paternoster, Augusta of Cayetana, Nazreen of Taxpayers, and Ashley of Pink Wash.
Oh, that's sick.
So it's going to be cool. Headlined by Danbert. It's going to be awesome. And maybe one more band. So we'll see. So that's going to be super rad. I had something else to mention, too. What was it, though? Maybe that was it. So anyway, a lot happened in the punk news. Oh, here's one other thing. So M.
Yes.
Not to get distracted before we get started, but I got to say, I was bumming out about Punk Rock Balling next year, even though it's 9 months away, because, M, as you recall, El Cortez raised their prices double as the last year, which was double as the year before. And I mean, as much as I love El Cortez, it's difficult to just justify two G's for a hotel in Vegas where hotels are practically free. You know what I mean?
Why is it so expensive?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if they sold or not. I don't think they sold, but maybe they've got new investors. My guess is they have a new philosophy, or they had a new philosophy. Whereas instead of just being dirt cheap and having people stay here to gamble, will actually be kind of expensive and actually make money off the hotel rooms. Most places in Vegas make minimal or even lose money to hotel rooms because they want you to come there to gamble, you know.
Sure.
So I was bumming out because I love El Cortez. And I'm almost like, has my constant like celebration of El Cortez been the reason that the prices have shot through the roof? And so there's other hotels on the old strip, the Golden Nugget, the Downtown Grand, the weirdly named The D, and there's a bunch of other, but all of them, and I've been in some of those hotel rooms, the hotel rooms themselves are just hotel rooms. It's not like the El Cortez Premium Deluxe Tower Cityside, which is like a penthouse. You're looking over the old strip. It's awesome. So I was bummed. I'm like I might not even go to Vegas next year. I mean, depending on the lineup, but just because I don't, you know, I want El Cortez, and even if I go, I'll be kind of sad about it. But I don't want to spend $2,000 on a hotel room in Vegas where you could spend, you know, under $1,000. It's kind of a dump thing to waste money on.
Yeah.
And today, El Cortez prices dropped dramatically.
Oh.
I booked my El Cortez room today. Literally the cheapest I've ever booked El Cortez ever. I've been there for like 6 years now, and I've been there like 8 times maybe.
Smart. Very smart.
So listen, people, with Vegas Hotel, you can cancel until like 3 days before the thing or whatever. So you should always book, as long as you remember to cancel, but you should always book and then cancel if you're not going to use it. But I will say, and this afternoon, El Cortez prices are already starting to rise again. So I don't know what that means. I'm pretty sure the hotels like work off some kind of formula based off supply and demand, and how quickly people are buying stuff. Like, I think there's some sort of computer that determines what the price is. So you should be aware of that. But I do find it weird that like everything was like $350 a night when it used to be like $70 a night. And then it dropped dramatically. Like, that's kind of weird, isn't it?
It is like what happened? It
I
seems
don't
like
know.
there was an event. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think you're right, and this is my speculation. My speculation is that some kind of conference or event was scheduled in that area, and the El Cortez was kind of the suggested hotel, you know?
Yeah.
And then I guess that maybe fell through or something, and so then all the prices dropped. But I will say, Em, prices for the entire year at El Cortez have dropped significantly, not just that week.
Oh, that's. Did you look it up at all?
What do you mean, did I look it up? Did I look up what?
The El Cortez, like if anything happened around the area or if they had
Oh,
anything go on?
you know, I not, I mean, honestly, I've been checking prices like every week, just hoping they went down, and they did go
Sure.
down. I mean, well, I manifested, I made it happen. But like I've never seen a hotel drop its prices by like 66%. You know what I mean? Like,
That's really weird. Like
yeah, it
something
is.
had to have happened.
Maybe. So, anyways, so that's that.
I have to look that up now. I want to know. I want to know if something happened at the El Cortez.
Something happened now. Well, actually, I'm looking at it now. Em, is they just finished a $20 million expansion in May or April, so that might suggest why
Oh.
prices went up. But maybe so they're like, oh, we got to make this money back, you know. But n now that prices have gone up, like maybe people stopped booking rooms, so they had to drop them back down.
They're gonna get more people with the cheaper rate. Too, like it's just good. Apparently they have a new restaurant called Hot Nudes.
Hot nudes.
It's noodles.
Ew.
So it's noodles like, nudes like noodles.
I've never actually eaten at El Cortez, but they do have a place called Seagull's, which is a really nice restaurant that I wanted to take clients to last year. But where did we end up going instead? I'm trying to remember. Can't remember. Oh no, we went to some place at Binion's. So, anyway, that's that. So, anyway, I know people care about my hotel stay, but the reason I'm saying people is if you go to Punk Rock Bowling, El Cortez is real cheap right now, and for a while, I thought, and a lot of other people thought, El Cortez sucked. El Cortez does not suck. El Cortez, the tower is amazing. The terrace is crappy. Cabana's okay, but it's in the middle of nowhere. But the tower is amazing, and it's super cheap and it's awesome. So I'm giving you a tip, people. You could be a sucker and book in the Golden Nugget like everyone else, or the Downtown Grand, or you can be a genius like myself and stay at El Cortez, which is at the intersection of no fewer than three late night punk rock bowling clubs. And I gotta say, Em, in a way, it's kind of like a drawback to book this early because now I'm already looking forward to punk rock bowling. So I'm like, only 9 months, only 9 months. But then it's like, well, maybe you should be focusing on your life right now and not worrying about 5 days, 9 months from now, you know?
That's good. You need to have those like long-term goals and stuff to look forward to.
That is true. And then once they actually name the acts, if it's cool and you've got your hotel, then it's a lot of fun to look forward to, you know.
Yeah, then you have extra extra hype.
Indeed. So, anyways, that's that. So yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this past Thursday was Summer Soiree 8. And
Woo!
Summer Soiree 7 was last almost exactly a year ago. I think Summer Soiree was actually almost exactly a year ago. Let me look it up real quick. Summer Soiree 7. I really shouldn't waste people's time looking it up. I really shouldn't. That's a waste of. Here it is. It was July 27, and Summer Soiree 8 was July 31, almost exactly a year apart. And Summer Soiree 7 was absolutely amazing. I mean, it was truly amazing. Dan Jomar, which is the Joe Jack Talcum Band, doing all Ramones to celebrate the Ramones' 50th anniversary. The Mikey Erg Band doing all of the Ramones' Leave Home, the Ramones, and the first show of Pinkwash, where they did three songs, including one Ramones cover, which they messed up and then replayed, and it was cool and awesome. And so then Summer
Cool.
Soiree 7 actually was going to be the final Summer Soiree because I'm like, there's no way I can top this. It's been 7 years. I don't have an idea for next year. That's going to be it, man. Summer Soiree 7 is it. But then Summer Soiree 7 was so amazing. I'm like, I'm invincible. No one can stop me. I can't do any wrong. Like every show I throw will be the best show ever. And then I threw two shows, which were either not great or a total disaster. And one show didn't even take place. And I'm like, oh, I can't end on this. No, I can't end as a beaten dog, you know? So the opportunity came around probably like March or April for a summer soiree eight, and you know, the opportunity to book the Dwarves came around. So, you know, summer soiree six was the Dwarves. It was Zorn, which was amazing. I love the Dwarves. Definitely tied for my favorite band with the Rolling Stones and AC/DC and a few other bands. And so I booked the Dwarves. Plus, the Dwarves have a new record called Sunshine, Lollipops, and Rainbows, which is an archive, unreleased recording from 1989. So that was cool. But then, you know, for summer soiree, I need a, you know, I need kind of a something that's almost as awesome or as awesome as the headliner to really make it special. Otherwise, it's just like a concert, you know, and summer soiree needs to be an event and not just a concert. So I tried to book Schoolie D once before. It didn't quite work out. So, of course, and actually, give me feedback here. Do you know who Schoolie D is?
Yes, because you talked about him on the podcast.
Okay, yeah, so Schoolie D is maybe a little regional in that he's, I would say, and I say this without exaggeration, he's probably one of the five most important MCs of all time. He's the literal inventor of gangster rap. And of course, gangster rap circa 1984 isn't like gangster rap is now. Is, you know, not quite the same thing. But also, not only did he invent gangster rap, he was kind of the first MC to really have super hard, super simple 808 reverb. Of course, Run DMC, who's before Schoolie D, had the 808, but it was kind of more like pack, 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 where Schoolie D had the boom, bat, like real low, heavy, like slamming. And of course, Ice Cube, Ice-T, Beastie Boys, Jay-Z, who else? LL Cool J. I'm missing one other real important person. Oh, Chuck D, Public Enemy. They all cite KRS-One. They all cite Schoolie D as super important. And so I wanted to book Schoolie D. He's a Philadelphia guy. He's a little eccentric. And so it didn't work out 2 years ago. But this year I said, well, let me put it. Well, we have sponsors every year. And through the sponsors, I was able to make it work out. And so that was pretty cool. And so I booked Schoolie D. And that was like three or four months ago. And for the past 3 or 4 months, I've been saying to everyone, Schoolie D, it's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. Everyone come to the Dwarves and Schoolie D. And little did I know, Em, that Schoolie D is Black Dahlia, the Dwarves' favorite rapper. He's got like all these Schoolie D records. I didn't even know that, you know, like he's got like all these super rare early Schoolie D 12 and singles and stuff. I had no idea. So Black Dahlia was like super excited, which was kind of cool.
That's very cool.
And so I also booked Lips of Cold, which is the band with the guy that licked the lady's foot.
Yes.
Goth rock super group. I booked The Noid, which is Tony Cadaver from the Phoenixville Punk Rock Flea Market. And I booked Pink Soap, which, of course, they played their first show at Summer Soiree 7. Well, as it turns out, the drummer is pregnant, so they're going to go on a little bit of a hiatus. So Summer Soiree 8 is their last show before a hiatus. So it's kind of cool that Summer Soiree 7 was their first show and Summer Soiree 8 was their last show before a hiatus. And actually, sometime over the past 6 months, someone said to me, hey, can Henry Thugsworth and the Servinator play the show? And Henry Thugsworth and the Servinator are 2 12-year-old rappers. And I was like, yeah, sure. And then I forgot about it. And I totally forgot.
You know? Oh, no.
And so I announced the show and everything. And kind of the person helping them out was like, so are Henry and Severin still playing the show? And I was like, oh, yeah, they are. Yeah. And then I'm also like, oh, how am I going to fit this into the schedule? I've already got 5 bands, which is, honestly, 3 bands is, 3 bands is enough. 4 bands is a lot. 5 bands is a super lot. 6 bands is way a lot, you know? And so I said to them, oh, also they should look into Schoolie D. If they want to be rappers, they should know who Schoolie D is. He's like super important in hip hop. I've been super busy like all summer, really. So it took me a little while to add them to the poster, which was kind of a dick move. And the person's like, "Are you sure they're still playing?" I'm like, "Yeah, they're playing the show for sure." But if there was some kind of complication, I was like, "Well, because they're 12, so maybe they had like school the next day or something." So I'm like, "But if they can't make it, that's all right. That's cool." They're like, "No, they're going to make it." I'm like, "Oh, great. That's awesome. You know? And so meanwhile, I'm emailing Schoolie D. I'm like, hey, or I'm text messaging. I'm like, hey, Schoolie, you excited for the show? Is there anything that you need? And he's not getting back to me. So for like 3 months, I'm like, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be rad. Schoolie D is going to be there and it's going to be awesome. And meanwhile, I'm thinking, oh my God, I hope he shows up, you know?
Yeah.
And so anyways, and I should have pointed out that there really wasn't a whole lot of drama. I mean, there was a little bit of, not drama, chaos at the show, but not a lot. And as we've discussed before, where I guess I used to somewhat enjoy the chaos, now am, even though it's, quote, more boring for me, I went, no chaos, Em. No chaos. You know what I mean?
Especially
after the 2024, after Summer Soirée 7 was a dream in that it was zero chaos. And then the next two shows were pure chaos, which was flashback to the days of yore, and it was very exhausting. So anyway, I don't want any chaos at this point. You know, I just want a smooth show. And so anyways, before the show, I made up a bunch of really cool stuff. I made 20 special copies of every Dwarves studio LP. But the real kicker was I made 3 exclusive Dwarves records that you could only get at the show. I made Dwarves Do the Ramones, which is the Dwarves covering 2 Ramones tracks, KKK Took My Baby Away and Rockaway Beach. I made a 8-inch version of their album Blood Guts. I mean, that's a 12-inch record, but I crammed it onto an 8-inch record, and I put Bobby Foss, the dwarf of the Dwarves, on the cover, and I called it the 35th Anniversary Compact Attack Edition. And then the real slammer was the Dwarves Live on Speed, which is an homage to the Who Lives at Leeds. The cover was a manila fold-out cover, just like the original Who Live at Leeds, and it had 5 quick songs on the A side, just like Live at Leeds, and 2 workout songs on the B side, just like Live at Leeds. And the original Live at Leeds famously had 12 inserts. I made 12 parody inserts for every copy of Dwarves Live on Speed, which took a lot of time, but it came out awesome. It really did. They were all cut. They're all lathe cuts. They were cut by Consonant Collective, which is Joe Carlo, who's awesome. And if you're in the Philadelphia area and you want lathe cuts, have him do them. He's the man. And actually, and this is crazy, I mean, we only made 40 of Live on Speed, 40 of Ramones, and 20 of Blood Guts Compact Attack Edition. So that's 100 records total. And so
yes,
no one's making a lot of money off these, especially Joe Carlo, who's cutting them. And his attention to detail was insane. He was like, he kept asking me like all these minute questions, like, oh, do you want me to cut it this way or to cut it that way? Or do you want to do clear vinyl or black vinyl? Or how does this sound? And so he really went above and beyond to make, and I super appreciate it. He went above and beyond to make these super limited edition records super quality and super nice. And, you know, with something like that, you want it to be super nice. I mean, honestly, like with super limited stuff, you can get away with it kind of being garbage or chintzy because it's super limited. But to the contrast, Joe actually made them super deluxe. And he did an awesome job. So they came out super nice. Aww. So hats off to Joe. And if you were there, you got them. And if you weren't, then you didn't. And on one hand, I do feel bad for people that couldn't make it to the show, like people in, say, the UK that didn't get a chance to buy them. As a collector myself, I've had that frustration many times. But on the other hand, Em, it is super fun to make hyper-limited stuff that you had to be there as a memento. That being said, if you weren't at the show and you want some of the super rare stuff, not a whole lot. I mean, it basically sold out. There might be a literal few floating around, and maybe you want to check out the Dwarves website here or there, and maybe some will pop up there eventually. I don't know if it's going to be this week, next month, next year. Perhaps annoyingly to some people, the last super secret editions took a year to go up on the Dwarves website. So I don't know when the remainders are going to go up. So, I mean, I think they should put them up as soon as they can, frankly, but we'll see, you know. So anyway, it was a lot of work making those, but it was a lot of fun, and it came out super nice. So anyway, the day before the show, I text Schoolie D, and I'm like, hey, Schoolie, is there any kind of drink that you want? I'm really asking him, are you there? You know? And he called me back, and he asked for some kind of vodka. And he says, also, I'm going to need a car. And I'm like, a car? I'm like, where are you? And he's like, Pottstown. And Pottstown's about an hour outside Philadelphia, and he had to go to King of Prussia to get some stuff beforehand too. And so at that point, I'm annoyed at a guy called Eric Victor. Eric Victor owns Creep Records, a record label and a record store. Awesome record store, awesome record label. And he was really the guy that when I floated the idea of School of D, he was like, yeah, you definitely should do that. And honestly, ultimately, the decision was on me. But I let him push me over the edge in booking School of D. So I'm annoyed at Eric that I've got this potential problem on my hand. So I called up Eric. I'm like, Eric, you have to go pick up School of D tomorrow. And Eric, to his credit, was like, okay, I'll do it. But I have to be back in time for my hockey game, you know. But then I realized, you know what, that's kind of a dick move of me. And also, I don't have Eric driving all over Pottstown looking for School of D. So I don't really use Uber or Lyft that much. But I said, oh, I can probably just have an Uber go to his house and pick him up, you know.
Yeah.
So I scheduled an Uber to go from Pottstown to King of Prussia to the venue the next day. And I said to myself, if School D gets in, that's fine. And if he doesn't, that's fine. And I'll just walk out to the audience and say, he didn't get in the Uber. Not my fault. You know what I mean?
For sure.
And honestly, like I actually, later on, someone said, were you freaking out? And the fact of the matter is, I kind of wasn't, because I was preparing myself for failure, you know? So I'm like,
right.
I'm like, what are they going to do to me? Yell at me? Lots of people have yelled at me, you know, online and in person. So what, you know? So I'm like, yeah, you know, that'll be that, you know? And also, the show sold out that day, which was super awesome. And it is so much fun going into a sold out show. You know, everything's paid for. Everyone, I mean, and honestly, the energy is palpable. When people come to a sold out show, they're more likely to have fun and be ready to have fun. The bands are all ready to have fun because they know it's going to be a packed house. Everybody knows they're going to get paid, unless they don't, and if there's a shady situation, that's a whole different thing, you know. And so it's so wonderful to go into a show with it being sold out. It's an incredible feeling, unlike my show last fall, which was the opposite. and so it's an amazing feeling. So anyways, I call up School D. I'm like, hey, School D, there's going to be an Uber at your house at 5:30, and it's going to take you to King of Prussia and then the venue. I'll see you at the venue. And he's like, great. And what do you think a Uber an hour outside of Philadelphia to Philadelphia with a stop along the way costs?
Do you know how long the stop was?
I don't, probably like 10 minutes.
Probably 10 minutes. Okay. I'm going to say $150.
$75. I thought that was extremely reasonable.
And that is not bad.
And the reason I bring that up, Em, and I don't even need to say this, but there is no excuse for drunk driving. No excuse. When you can get an Uber to an hour away for $75, where not even thinking about the people that you could hurt or maim, a DUI ticket is thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And you turn on your phone and you hit a button. That's how easy it is. There is no excuse for drunk driving. In the age of Uber and Lyft, no excuse at all. No excuse.
And there's lots of taxi companies, lots of public transit options. You have lots of ways to get back.
But I mean, I agree. I mean, honestly, like I often have trouble with taxis. But Uber, by contrast, I've taken Uber maybe 15 times total. It's always been super easy, super polite, and very affordable. No excuse for drunk driving. Uber and Lyft, fantastic. You know. So anyways,
arrive alive.
There you go. Exactly. And don't kill other people. You know. I mean, yeah. If someone drives drunk and kills themselves, I don't feel too bad because that's on them. But when they hurt other people, you know, that's you know. And it's so cheap, man. And it's so cheap and easy. You turn on your phone and you hit a button. And I realize people know what Uber is and they've used Uber. But I'm just underscoring how great of it. I mean, honestly, most modern technology is pure horror. AI, for example. Uber and Lyft, most excellent. Most excellent. So anyway, that's that. So anyway, day of the show. Actually, the night before the show. Black Daddy got in the day early. I met up with Black Daddy. We went out to a Thai restaurant and had a good time. And, of course, Black Daddy has to tell me his philosophies on all these different things. And a very intelligent guy who you'd like to talk. And so the next day, all day long, I was preparing for the show, blowing up balloons, doing final assembly for the records, making a vegetable tray for the bands. What else did I have to do? I got three blow up dolls. But I actually didn't, I didn't blow them up because I was actually over my parents' house blowing up the balloons. I didn't want to blow up dolls in front of my parents. So I just blew up the balloons. I left the blow up doll, but I got a funny story with regards to that in a second.
Okay.
So, So Lindsay, what else was it? You know, and getting other stuff ready, getting the money ready, getting their seats ready, all that stuff ready. And so, and of course, it was super duper hot. And then all of a sudden, there's a massive monsoon. Literally, the roads are closed.
Oh, no.
But I went anyways because I'm like, well, I got to be there, you know. But actually, it turned out the massive rain actually was super beneficial in that it took the temperature from 100 degrees to a perfect 75 degrees. It was perfect. And then by the time the show started, it was the rain was gone. It was awesome. So I get to the venue. I get there at 5 o'clock on the nose, actually. Caitlin of Pink Soap is already there. We go on in. The sound guy shows up, and honestly, he was kind of in a bad mood, you know. I don't know why, you know. I think he used to love doing soirees, but soirees is a lot going on, and I think he's annoyed by the amount of things happening at the soiree, you know. And sure. So first thing I do is I give him a pretty sweet tip. We're talking double salary, basically, you know, for the day. I realize there's a lot going on at the soiree.
Of course.
And the one thing, you know, at Punk News Summer Soirees, we always share the back line because I had six bands. And let me see if I can pull up the schedule here. I mean, I really, well, in part because I forgot about Henry and Severin. Let's see here. Give me a second. I'm going to pull this one up. Like, the schedule was more cramped than ever. I'm pulling up the here we go. Here's the schedule. 5 okay. to 6:30 band load in. 7 Doors. 7 to 7:35 John G intro. 7:35 to 7:50 Henry and Severin. 7:50 to 7:55 Pink Soap setup. 5 minutes for Pink Soap to set up. But Henry and Severin are hip hop. So Pink Soap is really already set up, right? Pink Soap, yeah. 7:55 to 8:20. 8:20 to 8:30 Lips of Cole set up. Only 10 minutes to set up. 8:30 to 8:55 Lips of Cole play. 8:55 to 9:05 the Noid setup. 9:05 to 9:30 the Noid play. 9:30 to 9:35 Schooly D sets up. 5 minutes. 9:35 to 10 Schooly D. Then 10 to 10:15 Dwarf set up, and 10:15 till 11 Dwarfs play. Oh, well, actually, a couple days before the show, I'm like, hey, Schooly, so how much time do you want? And he's like, I thought it was going to take an hour. He's like, 15 minutes. I'm like, can you do 25? You know.
Yeah.
And he didn't really post about the event at all, which was kind of annoying. But, you know, he's a legend. And sometimes legends don't always get their due. And so I'm trying to be, like, just super accommodating because he's a legend. I really think, like, he really should be way up there fame-wise, and he's not, you know. He's an incredible artist. So, you try to see the world from someone's shoes, you know.
Yeah.
And so anyways, so I get there at 5, Caitlin's there, and so we share the back line, and it's always a great worry for me, and I always forget about it until like the day before, is if any, so musicians are, generally speaking, musicians are very not dependable people, very not dependable, and so I always forget about until the day before. I'm like, oh wait, if out of the three people that I need to show up, you know, the back line, the bass cab, the guitar cab, the drums, if any of them doesn't show up or even shows up late, I am effed, like totally effed, you know, because if one of the pieces of the back line didn't show up, no one can sound check, and then we're totally off our schedule already and totally screwed up, you know. And actually, yeah. You recall when I did a show, not last winter, but the winter before, some of the back line didn't show up, and actually Eric Victor saved my behind totally. And so, you know, at 5:15, only Caitlin is there with the guitar. 5:30, the drum show up without the bass cap. I'm like, oh, my God. And then actually at 5:40, the bass cap showed up. I'm like, oh, so we're good to go. So at that point, I'm grooving. You know what I mean? Because the back line's there, show sold out. John's job is essentially done. Not really, but sort of, you know.
Yes.
But the funny thing is, like, I am a terrible show promoter, show organizer, because everybody's relaxed. Everyone's just moseying along. I'm like, it's 5:50. Doors are at 7. No one sound check at all. And no one's even set up. And like, even the sound guys are kind of relaxing and hanging out. And I'm like, why am I always the one that, like, I'm the only one that seems concerned about our extremely tight time slot. And part of that is because I do pack in everything so tight, whereas at other shows, time isn't as much of an issue, you know? So anyway, I go to the sound man. I'm like, so should they start sound checking? And Pink Soap are like eating pizza. And he's like, well, they can finish eating their dinner first. And I'm like, okay. So I wait like 5 minutes and they're just kind of like relaxing, like really like taking their time. I'm like, all right, Pink Soap, sound check in 5 minutes, you know? And so then, so basically I had to like whip everybody along because everyone's just kind of relaxing and hanging out, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, and meanwhile, 6 o'clock, 6:15, your Uber is approaching destination. 6:20, your Uber is 10 minutes away from the destination. I'm like, oh my God, I hope he gets in. I hope he gets in. 6:25, your Uber is near your destination. 6:30, the Uber is at the destination. And what do you think happened?
He got out and he was ready to go.
Bam! Schoolie D, right in. And then he's going to King of Prussia, right? I'm like, oh, man, I hope he doesn't get caught up in King of Prussia. Emmy's in King of Prussia for like five. After he gets out of King of Prussia, beautiful. I mean, we are totally set, you know. Except Dwarves, Black Daddy was in town, but the Dwarves' plane was delayed, so they really couldn't sound check, which is – that's. I mean, the Dwarves are such pro. I mean, I know they like to sound check, but unlike some of these – opening bands that require extremely specific drum kits and this sound and that, like Dwarves just show up and just destroy every time. Like, you know, they just destroy. So anyways, the band sound check, everyone sounded good. Dwarves are at 7. By about 6:40, there's a line around the block, which that's always so much fun, man. You know what I mean? It really is. So I got my globe braces like I always do. I go out, I'm handing out globe bracelets. And some people – actually, what's funny, man, is – the low budget show that I did, which had some issues, how receptive do you think people were to globe bracelets? The reason I hand out globe bracelets is because the original idea of the summer soiree was to do something different. And part of that was, instead of making everything skulls and chains, we'll make it kind of fancy, Great Gatsby High Society, as directly lifted from World Inferno Friendship Society, who played Summer Soiree 1. The other part was, at that show, I handed out like globe bracelets and stuff because I'm like, the point is to have fun. At so many punk gigs, at least Maximum Rock and Roll style punk gigs, people frown, stare at the ground, snort cocaine, and say they had a great time but really didn't. Whereas I said, I'm going to make this like a rave. So, you know, people go to the raves to have fun. So I started handing out globe bracelets, and ever since then, I've handed out globe bracelets. At the low budget show, which was a couple years ago, which was ostensibly a fun crowd, what do you think their reaction was to globe bracelets?
I'm going to say they were not into globe bracelets, which I think is silly.
They weren't. And honestly, what was kind of interesting about, I mean, you know, the Low Budget's awesome band, but they're not a macho band by any means, you know. The crowd seemed to think that the globe bracelets were like a feminine or, quote, gay. And they didn't want to, like, wear them. You know what I mean? And it's like, we're here to have fun.
But they're fun.
I hear you, Em. Meanwhile, Em, Dwarves, you know, the Dwarves aren't, like, tough guys, but they are. You know, there's been lots of fistfights at Dwarves shows over, not so much now, but back in the day. Although, once in a while till now, the Dwarves are loud, fast, and violent sounding. Em, how receptive do you think the Dwarves crowd and the Schoolie D crowd, original Gangsta Rapper, how receptive were they to globe bracelets?
Fucking loved the globe bracelets.
They loved them, man. People are weighing them. Sometimes people would be like, well, what are these for? And I'd be like, fun. And they'd be like, oh, great. I think some people thought they were like entry bands, which kind of makes sense, you know? But I'm like, no.
Oh,
I'm
sure. Like,
it's for fun. You know, it's fun. You know, so people were weighing the globe bracelets. However, and where I used to be able to get 20 globe bracelets for $1, now it's 12 for $1.50. Big difference. So...
Actually,
quite sadly, this year was the first year I didn't have programs for Summer Soiree, only because since COVID, prices have gone through the roof. And where I used to be able to make programs for about 40 cents each, what do you think the cost to make a program now is, Em?
I'm going to say $1.
About $2 to $3 each. I just can't I can't justify that, you know, which is sad, but I just can't make it happen. You know,
yeah, that's.
I mean, because I'm not. I could raise the ticket price $3, but people won't be paying $3 for a program. You know what I mean? Like, so it kind of sucks. But what can you do? You know, but I still have plenty of globe bracelets, and you know, I had Mardi Gras beads and Hawaiian lei necklaces, and people are way into that stuff. So I just gave a whole bunch of that stuff out. And so then at 7:30, the show starts. Pretty much packed house already, even though it's the beginning of the show. Not fully packed, but pretty much packed house. And so I put on my Punk News tuxedo, which honestly has kind of, at this point, dissolved into a Punk News Carnival Parker outfit, because 7 years ago when Adam White and I debuted Summer Soiree, we had on our custom blue Punk News tuxedo jackets that my mom made for me, top hats, tuxedo dress shirts, blue bow ties, blue cummerbunds, and white tuxedo pants with a blue stripe down the side, and canes, and it looked pretty awesome. Well, since then, Em, I've gotten sort of lazier, and you know, so now the quote Punk News tuxedo is the blue Punk News tuxedo jacket, a white dress shirt, just black jeans and shoes, my top hat, and my blue bow tie. However, Em, at 7:20, when I was putting my bow tie on, it exploded. The bow tie literally exploded.
Wow.
It was a cheap piece of garbage at like 7 years old. So it just like snapped. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So I had no bow tie. So it was really just me in a blue blazer, a blue dress shirt, and a top hat, which doesn't quite have the same visual effect as a faux tuxedo. So so going forward, we'll see what's going to happen with regards to that. But so I run up on stage and the show started with Sunshine Lollipops and Rainbows by Leslie Gore. Then I run up on stage. There's a bunch of explosions. I run up on stage, and I do basically my usual spiel. I say, Philadelphia makes some noise. Yeah, Philadelphia makes some noise. Yeah. When I say hey, you say ho. When I say hey, you say ho. Hey, ho, hey, ho, hey, ho, hey, ho. Explosion. When I say let's, you say go. When I say let's, you say go. Let's go, let's go, let's go. Explosion. Then I thank all the sponsors. Oh, I got to thank all the sponsors who really were a huge part of making this show. Because without them and their sponsorship, certain costs couldn't have been covered. So we got to thank Revilla Grooves and Gear, Angry Young and Poor in Lancaster, Revilla Grooves and Gears in Milltown, excellent record store. Angry Young and Poor, excellent record store in Lancaster. Rock and Roll Night Fight, awesome store right outside Philadelphia. Records, clothes, that kind of stuff. Siren Records, awesome record store in Doylestown. Heavy Metal Hair Salon, amazing hair salon in Philadelphia. Sit and Spin Records, best record store in Philly for sure. Sky Valley Records, great record store in New Jersey. Repo Records, awesome record store in Philadelphia. Vinyl Revival, excellent record store just outside Philadelphia. Rainbow Records, awesome record store in Wilmington. Printed Record Exchange, one of the best record stores ever. And Squeezebox Records, excellent record store down in Delaware. So thanks to all the sponsors for really, really making the show possible. Like literally making the show possible. So then I thank the sponsors. There was explosions. Then I said, it's Summer Soiree 8. Then I said, it's the Dwarves celebrating the new record, Sunshine Lollipops and Rainbows, explosions. Make some noise for the Dwarves, explosions. Then make some noise for the original gangster rapper, School D, explosions. And then actually it was a School D sample. Then it was Long Run, Chester County Punkers, The Noid. And I had a sample from the Noid commercial from Domino's. Then, Mixed Noise for Lips of Coal. And then I had, like, bats fly out. Then it was Pink Soap. And I had a Zestfully Clean commercial. And then get ready for Philadelphia's most dangerous rappers. They're furious. They're dangerous. They're 12 years old. Henry Thugsworth and the Servinator. And I jumped into the crowd. So, and this is it. This is a Schooly D and a Dwarves audience. There's two 12-year-olds up on stage. What do you think the audience reaction was?
I think the audience's reaction was very supportive.
The audience went nuts for them. And I got it. They're 12. They're two 12-year-old rappers. And it actually was a little bit more avant-garde than I thought it was going to be. But they're 12-year-old rappers. They rap like they're 12. A lot of F-words, which was kind of surprising to me. But like the audience was digging it, and they were loving it. And kind of what's funny, Em, is I was thinking about this. Imagine, I mean, what they did is actually very remarkable. They're 12-year-olds, and they kept an audience captivated who doesn't even know them for 15 minutes in a live setting. That's pretty impressive, really.
That is very impressive.
And so they had a blast. The audience loved them. And so they were done. And then between them and Pink Soap, And between all the bands, I had playing 80s and 90s dancehall and reggae, which sometimes that just kind of fades into the background and sometimes really gets the crowd grooving depending on the crowd. It was real cool. All night long, the crowd was totally grooving to reggae. And I mixed between, I guess, what I would call serious reggae songs and kind of pop reggae. So we played The Electric Slide by Marcia Griffiths. We did Pass the Dutchie by Musical Youth. But we also did like Welcome to Jam Rock by Damian Marley, Rude Boy Number by Cuddy Ranks, and that kind of stuff. And so the crowd was really grooving all the reggae. And I will say, at most punk gigs, they play punk between the punk bands. Foolish. For two reasons. First of all, okay. people get bored. You know, like it's the same sound the whole night. People get bored. Second, yes. is if you have kind of more musical or groovy stuff between punk bands, when the punk band does come out, they sound that much more savage and impressive. You know what I'm saying?
I think so, yeah.
So always never play punk between punk bands. Always play something that's sort of parallel, you know, and reggae and punk have been intertwined ever since punk started to a degree, you know. So it was cool. Next up was Pink Soap. Pink Soap absolutely tore it up. They were in full-on punk grunge mode. Sometimes they're kind of rockier, sometimes they're kind of grungier, but this was punk grunge. They tore it up. The crowd was way into it. Next was Lips of Coal. Lips of Coal was super great. They did kind of their goth thing, and the goth death rock thing. The crowd was way into it, and also kind of a cool difference between Pink Soap and the next band. And the people were way into it. Next was The Noid. Of course, Noid is a, you know, kind of a straight up punk band from the area, and people were totally into that. They rocked. Tony, the singer, sings kind of like Danzig, and people definitely were into that, especially since a lot of dwarf songs actually are influenced by the Misfits, even through today. Then, yes. That's right. So right, and here's where things got a little chaotic. Schooly D said to me, well, when Schooly got there, I'm like, hey, so Schooly, do you want any food or drink or anything? And he's like, I usually have a cake before performing. I'm like, a cake?
Oh.
Do you mean like a birthday cake? He's like, you know, a Philadelphia cake. And I think he meant like a tasty cake, but I'm still not sure. And do you know what a tasty cake is?
No, what's a tasty cake?
Do you know what like a Drake's cake is? Or like, let me think, I can see the logo. I can't think of the name of the company.
Little Debbie?
Like a Little Debbie's. You know what those are, right?
Yeah, with like a oatmeal cookie kind of cream cake?
Yes, sort of. So you're right. That kind of a thing. A tasty cake is the Philadelphia version of that. But really, tasty cake has been in like decline the past like 20 years or so. So they're actually kind of hard to find than you might think. And so I'm like, okay, wait right here. So there's a Mexican corner store right around the corner, but it's run by Guatemalan people, but the store itself is Mexican, which is kind of weird. Like, it's got Mexican products, but it's Guatemalan people that run it. And so I run in. Oh, and also he wants lozenges. So I run in, and of course, you know, corner stores are like packed to the gills, you know. And so I'm like, I look up, I know a little bit of Spanish. Hablo un poco español. And so I look up the word for lozenge in Spanish, and it's lozenge. So I'm saying, ¿tienes lozenge? And she looks at me like I'm an alien. And so I like show her a picture of like lozenge, like Luden's lozenge. And she like starts handing me cough syrup. I'm like, a lozenge, you know? Like, there's no other kind of, like, convenience stores nearby. So if I'm going to go find a convenience store, and by the time I get in a car or whatever and come back, we're looking at a half hour, 45 minutes, maybe an hour. You know, by the time I get in the car, drive there, buy, come back and park. You know what I mean? And yes. So I'm like, no, lozenge, you know, when you're sick. Tienes enferma. And she's, like, giving me, like, all these other medicines. I'm like, no, a lozenge. And so I see, like, a little chocolate candy in a bar in a wrapper, you know. So I pick it up and I say, coma aquí, pero medicina, you know. And then somehow she like points to the back wall, and there's a bag of lozenges there. I'm like, yes, lozenges. You know, so I grab the lozenges and I'm like, I need cake. And so then like they've got like Mexican pastries there, which aren't exactly like cake. but there's one that looks like a cake, even though it's not. It's actually bread, but it looks like a cake. So I grabbed that one. I grabbed a donut. I grabbed like a cookie, and then they also had kind of like a Little Debbie or something, a Little Debbie Danish, which are always terrible. But I wanted as many options for Schooly D as I could find. So I buy all that stuff. It comes to the grand total of like $4.12, you know. So I run back down and I say, I'm like, "School, here's your lozenge." And then I'm like, "Here's your cake." And then I give him like one cake. I'm like, "Oh, wait." And then I gave him like the three other cakes that I had. He's like, "Whoa," you know. And so then I left him with that. And I still don't know what kind of cake that he wanted, honestly. But I figured one of those cakes has to be close enough, you know. So the show's going awesome. And then here's where things got a little chaotic, not that chaotic. So I say to Schooly, I say, "Schooly, are you going to run off a laptop or you have a DJ?" Oh, also, I forgot. Schooly says to me, "Can I have a guest list?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, sure. I mean, how many do you have?" He's like, "Five." I'm like, "Okay, that's fine. Who's on your guest list?" And listen to this guest list then.
Okay.
Hold up right now. I've got so many text messages here from the past couple days. Here we go. Squeak these guest lists. Julie somebody, right? Then DJ Too Tough, Big Papa, Big Trigger, and Chain Dog.
That's a great set of names.
And so I'm like, "Sure, man." You know? And so then these guys show up. One guy's wearing a welding mask for some reason. And I'm like, "Well,
hell yeah."
You know, and you can just tell these are all like OGs from back in the day. Like these are hip hop dudes from back in the day, you know, just the way they carry themselves, just the way they're dressed, just the way they all know each other. I'm like, "Oh, these are like hip hop dudes from back in the day, you know?" And so anyway, I say, "Schooly D," I'm like, "So are you going to run your beats off a laptop or a turntable?" He's like, "Well, I got a thumb drive. Do you think the sound guy can run off the thumb drive?" I'm like, "Probably." So we go down to the sound guy and like, "Can you do Schooly D's beats off the thumb drive?" And he said he could, but I can tell he's already getting a little agitated. I'm like, "Okay, that's cool." Then Severin comes to me, one of the 12-year-old rappers, and he's like, "Schooly D says we can introduce him. Are we allowed to do that?" And I'm like, "Well, I mean, it's not up to if Schooly D says so, that's fine with me." You know, so they're all like really, really excited. And then Snoop Hawk, the drummer of the Dwarfs, come to me. And I actually forgot about this. Do you know what Aqua Teen Hunger Force is?
Yes, I know that show.
You know the beginning rap? "My name is Meatwad." You know that rap? Do you know who sings that?
No.
Schooly D.
Oh, seriously?
The rapper that you hear throughout Aqua Teen Hunger Force is Schooly D, which I did know, but I forgot because it's funny how – and I recognize this from the concert. Schooly D is many different things than many different people. To people that are a little bit older than me, he's the MC that used to see back in the day, right? To me, he's one of these founding fathers of hip-hop legends, right? To people younger than me, he's the guy from Aqua Teen Hunger Force, you know? And like people – like a lot of people just know him as the Aqua Teen Hunger Force guy, you know? And so Snoop Pack, who's about 10 years younger than me, he's like, "Can I – Schooly D wants me to do the opening drum for him. We're going to do Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Can I do that?" And I'm like, "Sure." I don't know why everyone's asking me for permission, but I'm like, "But actually, that honestly, Em, it's actually very nice. Like, they understand that I'm throwing the thing and there's stuff going on. And so they want to make sure, like, go smooth. You know what I mean?" And of so course. I say, "Sure." So I go to the sound guy who's getting a little frustrated, you know. I say, "Change of plans. We're not going to do the musical intro. Snoop Pack's going to do a drum intro, and these two 12-year-olds are going to introduce Schooly D." And he's like, "All right." So I can see he's getting a little agitated, but you know, whatever, man.
Yeah.
And so Snoop Pack comes up, and actually the show got a little delayed because Snoop Pack couldn't get his. This was kind of cool. Snoop Pack couldn't get one of his drum. Oh, the kick pedal to go down or something. So everyone came to me and to solve a mechanical problem, which I was able to solve, even though I knew nothing technical about any of this stuff. And I mean, terrible mechanical wise anyways, but I was able to solve the problem. So anyways, Henry and Severin go on stage and they intro Schooly D. They did a great job intro. And this was kind of flattering. Their intro to Schooly D was extremely similar to my intro in general, which I was impressed in that they were able to synthesize my intro, which they'd only ever heard once, and reformulate it into Schooly D, and they're 12. And it was amazing. I mean, I don't think I, as a 12-year-old, would have that kind of confidence. Was you?
As a 12-year-old? No, I don't think so.
Go on stage and introduce a literal hip-hop legend in front of a group, 250 adults who you don't know, and like kind of do a back and forth intro between the two of you that you just put together 5 minutes beforehand.
Nope.
So they intro him, the crowd goes crazy. Schooly D takes the stage, but he also brings, you know, Chain Dog and Big Papa and Big Tree. So like they're part of his act. And I'm thinking, why did he just tell me that's his act? like you told me you don't have to ask for, you don't have to ask for guest lists or people that are in the band, you know? So they go up on stage and they're hyping Schooly D. And then Snoop Pack starts drumming the Aqua Teen Hunger Force song. Schooly D comes up on stage, does Aqua Teen Hunger Force. The crowd is losing their mind, man. They are losing their mind.
Oh my god.
Because it's a live, unexpected collaboration already, you know? And mm-hmm. also he's a seminal hip hop guy, but he doesn't do that many shows, and he clearly doesn't do that many Philadelphia shows. And so for a lot of people, they thought they would never ever get to see Schooly D. And here, they're not only are they getting Schooly D, he still looks like Schooly D from 1985. It's like he stepped out in 1985. He sounds amazing. He's going full force, but also there's a whole crew up there with him, like full unit attack. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so they just rip through. And so Snoop Pack drums, people are already losing their mind. He breaks right in down in the Gucci time. Or was it PS? No, I think it was Gucci Time, which is one of his early huge hits. The crowd loses their mind. They're singing along with him. And school, I mean, I've seen my fair share of hip hop. This was tied with KRS-One and the Beastie Boys for the best hip hop show I've ever seen. Like they were so on point, so into it, so high energy. And not only that, it was like super raw, super real hip hop. I mean, it was truly hip hop at its most hip hop level. And I'm not trying to be a dick, but like you a lot of more modern hip hop, like mumble rappers or even guys like Drake or whatever. Like, I mean, it's hip hop, but it's like, it's not boom, bap, boom, bap. It's more laid back, I'll say, or even, you know, something else. Where this was for, you know, school. Remember, Schooly told me he wanted to do 15 minutes. I got him to 25 and he does 50 minutes. Boom, bat. The crowd was losing their minds. Absolutely losing their minds. I mean, I can't wait to book Schooly D again. I had no expectations, you know. And I kind of thought, oh, you know, it'll be cool to have him play. He's a legend. And we'll get to say we saw Schooly D. Shows what an idiot I am. He showed everyone how hip-hop is done. He was absolutely amazing. He did all the hits. He did some stuff that I think's never been released. The crowd went crazy, and he was absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Like, absolutely amazing. And, check this out.
Yes.
I was talking to my mother a couple days later about this, and she pointed this out. It's like – and actually, coincidentally, literally the next day, the local news ran a special on how important Schooly D is. I had no idea they were – and there's actually another coincidence after that, too.
That's cool.
So, you know, I was telling my mom the week beforehand about Schooly D. And then actually, it might even be the night of the show or the night after the show, my mom just happened to see this special. And it's like Schooly D with Jay-Z, Schooly D with James Brown, Schooly D with Stevie Wonder, like showing how important he is, you know. And you know, Schooly D with Nas and Schooly D with all these other seminal rappers. And frankly, Schooly D might be more important than all of them. And let me point out, Schooly D, he's the original gangster rapper. He was a gangster. I don't think he is now. I'm not sure he's not. But in the 80s, he was a street cat. You know what I mean? Whatever that means. And he was cool enough, first of all, to play a punk rock show. You know what I mean? But also, he was cool enough to let these two 12-year-old white kid rappers introduce him. And he was totally cool about it. And let me put this delicately. The 12-year-old kids are – in punk can be a nice place to go if you're a misfit or don't fit in. You know what I mean?
So
maybe that's where these kids were coming from. And I'll tell you more afterwards, then. And Schooly D let these 12-year-olds introduce him. Would Jay-Z let two 12-year-old kids introduce him? you know,
probably not.
Probably not. You know what I mean? Would Puff Daddy probably? That's a different story. Would I don't pick any famous rapper there is. I mean, who's the biggest rapper right now? You know, would the Future let 2 12-year-olds introduce him? Probably not. You know, would DJ Khaled let 2 12-year-olds introduce him? Definitely not.
Well,
you know?
He introduces himself.
DJ Khaled sucks. The point being is, Schooly D is as important as it gets to hip hop, and he didn't like he was totally cool about it. Totally cool. Like Schooly D has an image, but he doesn't need to protect that image because that image is what he is. You see what I'm saying?
Of course,
so many other rappers would be like, oh, I need to, you know, show everyone that I'm a gangster or whatever. Where Schooly D knows there's nothing that can take away from his image because he is that image, you know? And so it was so cool. Like, he was so cool about it, and he was nice. And he was – Schooly D was the man. I spoke to him after the set. Schooly D was the man. I really can't overstate it, and I think anybody should book him if they can. He is the man. An amazing show, nice guy, and he came to kick ass, and he kicked ass, and it was awesome. Totally awesome. And then so they answer Schooly D, of course, with the Dwarves. And here's where our next audible is Dwarves have an audio track where they take the stage to. And so I'd already give that to the sound guy. But it turned out, you know, Blag said, oh, what if we have Schooly D introduce us? Because, you know, Blag loves Schooly D. So Blag asked Schooly D to introduce him. What do you think Schooly D says?
Yes.
Yeah, he's totally down. He's like, sure. And so I go to the sound guy. I'm like, oh, change of plans in 3 minutes. Schooly D's going to introduce the Dwarves, not the sound bed. And so I could tell that the sound guy was getting pretty frazzled. But, you know what? I was actually kind of annoyed at him, honestly, because he's getting a little frazzled. I'm like, you know, bro, I tip you a fat stack. This is not – there's no fights. No one's breaking anything. You know, it's a somewhat chaotic but not out-of-control punk show, you know. Also, the crowd, sold-out show, totally packed. How well do you think they were behaved?
Based on their reactions to positive reactions to the Globe bracelets, I'm going to say pretty well behaved.
The crowd was awesome. You know, I've thrown shows where the crowd was awesome. I've thrown shows, the low budget show, where the crowd was not awesome. And in between. And I felt like I was throwing a World Inferno show again, in that this crowd came to have fun. And that might be kind of self-evident, but at not all shows the crowd comes to have fun. Sometimes the crowd comes to drink. Sometimes the crowd comes to socialize, but not really watch the show. Sometimes the crowd comes just to be seen. Sometimes the crowd comes to judge the act. You know, I felt like it was the World Inferno crowd. They came to have fun, which is the best crowd there is. Everyone is having an absolute ball. People are moshing during some of the bands, but they're being cool about it. You know, between the bands, there's reggae. People are dancing. Everyone's having an amazing time. And so instead of having the Dwarves audio intro, Schooly D comes out, introduces the Dwarves. The Dwarves come up. Let me see if I can pull the song they broke right into. Give me a second here. Let's see here. Sorry. There we go. The Dwarves broke right into Dominate. I forgot about this. Sturgeon showed up. Actually, he was invited, and he showed up. And he wanted to perform once. And before this, I forgot all about this. Before the gig, Sturgeon's like, I want to sound check with the Dwarves. I'm like, well, okay, if they come, you can sound check with them. And he's like, but they're going to be late, but I want to sound check with them. And I'm like, I don't control when the Dwarves arrive, Sturgeon. I mean, if they come, you're welcome to sound check with them. And he's like, but it would be real useful if I sound check with them. I'm like, well, that's not within my power. You know what I mean? And so he for whatever reason he wanted to be like incognito during the first part of the show. So he put on like this shark pajamas that like covers everything except your face. And I'm I don't know if that's making you incognito, because you're a pretty unique looking person to begin with. So wearing a shark outfit, I don't know if that makes you incognito or not. So anyways, Schooly D introduced to the Dwarves. Sturgeon runs up in his shark outfit and does the Dominator intro. Then the Dwarves rip right into the Dominator. And then the Dwarves are sounding absolutely fantastic. It's Blag, Rex Everything, Mike Pygmy, and Snoopak on drums. They were absolutely on fire. They're all in a good mood because it's a sold-out show. They were absolutely awesome. Then they actually played some new stuff. They played Voodoo and Roxette, some of the new stuff. Devil's Level, And then also they actually played a brand new song that isn't even released yet, a song called We Are the Scene, which is coming up off – well, I shouldn't say what's coming up off of. They played a new song called We Are the Scene, which was super cool and super good. They played a ton of classics. They played Dairy Queen, Drugstore, We Only Came to Get High, Speed Demon, I Will Deny, Everybody's Girl. And they actually did something also special too. Midway through the show, Caitlin of Pink Soap, she's a big Doors fan, and she wants to do We Will Dare. And so I think they're actually not playing that song on this tour. So about midway through the set, they did We Will Dare with Caitlin on the female vocals and Blag on the male vocals. So it was yet another cool spontaneous collaboration on stage, which was super cool. About halfway through the show, Nick Oliveri's microphone cut out. And do you remember the last Dwarf show I played where there was there was audio issues that year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah, they were like all over.
Yes. So Summer Soiree 6, there was audio issues where Blag's monitor wasn't working. And Blag got kind of frustrated. And he's like berating the sound guy, frankly. And then people are like running up to me, giving me these cool mic cords and stuff. And I know nothing about audio tech. I know nothing. And if you look on the stage, there are dozens of cords. There's monitors. There's amps. And it's basically like let's say you know nothing about car repair, and someone comes up to you and says, "Here, change this alternator." And you're like, "I don't even know what an alternator is." You know. And so last year, I literally got lucky, and that someone I don't even know who. I think it might have been an audience member 2 years ago. They said, check to see if the cord is loose on the monitor. So I moshed my way through the crowd to the monitor in front of the stage. People are moshing into me, and I couldn't even see because the monitor is like between other things. I put my hands on the side of the monitor. This is 2 years ago, and I felt a cable, and I pushed it, and it fixed it. It was divine intervention or something, and that fixed it. And then Blag went from being in a kind of a bad mood to being in a good mood. And so this year, of course, Nick Oliveri's microphone isn't working. And I'm like, oh, no, it's happening again. It's happening again. And so Blag is kind of berating the sound guy, which I get that Blag's frustrated, and that probably was the sound guy's fault. But I don't know that Blag berating the sound guy is going to get to fix it. But also, I'm annoyed at the sound guy. He's kind of just sitting there petrified. You know what I mean? Like, he's not solving the problem. And so I start changing mic cords. Nothing is fixing it. You know what I mean? And Blag kind of pissed off. And so then I go back to the sound guy and I'm like, can we do something about this? And so he goes up on stage and then he said it's because like this cable has been disconnected, but he was wrong. It wasn't that. It was some other issue that he fixed. And then once the sound got fixed, everyone went back to being in a better mood. And the band just totally was amazing. I mean, the whole show, people were moshing, having a great time. The band sounded excellent. I just thought it was. I'm having flashbacks to 2 years ago. I'm like, not again, not again. I'll point out, and I've never had that happen at any other show I've ever thrown. You know. And so right. The Dwarves are kicking ass. And then near the end, they did I Will Deny. And Sturgeon comes on. Oh, and actually, before Sturgeon comes out, I see a young lady, the Choking Victim. So I'm like, oh, are you a Choking Victim fan? And she goes, yeah. And so I said, well, something kind of cool is going to happen tonight. And she's like, what? I'm like, I'm not telling you. And then Sturgeon comes back out, but now he's not incognito anymore. Now he's in his suit and his cowboy hat. And he did I Will Deny, which was awesome. The crowd went nuts. Then they did Everybody's Girl. Then they did We Must Have Blood. And, oh, I forgot one other important joke. Well, I'll have to go way back. And when I first got there, I started blowing up the blow-up dolls, right? Which yes. were very hard to blow up, like because they're cheap. Like, they were extremely hard. So I'm going, and guess who opens the door and comes in just as I'm blowing up these blow-up dolls?
Your mom.
No, not my mom. My, you know, Severin and Henry's parents. And there's like 12. I'm like,
oh, no.
I like kind of threw them under a table. I'm pretty sure they saw them. I'm like, I could see in their face. They're like, this is a weird scene. You know, although I'll point out that the blow-up dolls did not have orifices, I'll point out. So they were faux blow-up dolls. So anyways, the last track was Unrepentant. I come out and I dump about 200 balloons on the crowd. Meanwhile, from up on the balcony, Tony of the Noid throws 20 pool noodles onto the audience and the blow-up dolls. The Dwarves are playing Unrepentant. People are whacking each other with pool noodles. The blow-up dolls are getting chucked around. People are faux banging the blow-up dolls. There's balloons all over. And it was just an absolute amazing ending to the show. I was amazed at how quickly the night went because there was so much going on. Yet again, the Dwarfs absolutely killed it and smashed it. And it was absolutely amazing. And then, so everyone had a great time. School of Eagles had a great time. The Dwarfs had a great time. The audience definitely had a great time. We handed out goodie bags at the end. People were loving the goodie bags. Although, honestly, this goodie bags are a little bit skimpier this year just due to rising costs, man. Like, goodie bags usually cost me about 50 cents each. Now it's like a buck or more each, you know. And so everybody got a goodie bag all the way out the door. And it was just an amazing, amazing, amazing show all around. It was special because all the bands were great, but actually it was extra, extra special because there was so much spontaneous collaboration. Severin and Henry with Schooly D, Schooly D with the Dwarves with Schooly D, Pink Soap with the Dwarves. It was really wild in that, like, bands don't, you know, at a show, bands usually don't necessarily hang out or whatever. I mean, they do sometimes, but, you know, whatever. But, like, all the bands were there to, like, kind of do spontaneous collaboration and work with each other to make it, like, an extra special show. So it really was kind of magical, you know. It was awesome. And so everyone had a great time. And then everyone clears out. And, of course, then who's left to, yet again, sweep up and clean up the show after the show?
Oh, no. How many cans did you have to move?
Actually, the dwarf show on Summer Story 6, the amount of trash was ridiculous. The trash was literally ankle deep, the entire venue. I mean, it looked like it was a garbage yard. Literally, the floor was literally covered in garbage. This year, there was significantly less garbage, but I still had to, like, clean it up. And on one hand, I'm like, I wonder if people realize that when they do the, quote, cool thing and just throw their beer can on the ground, they're thinking, let John clean this up, the guy that organized this fun evening for me, you know? But on the other hand, like, I'm actually not complaining that much. I'm really not complaining at all because even though that's maybe not a real respectful thing to do, nothing was damaged. And people doing that is kind of a sign of them having fun to a degree, you know? And yeah. So people really did have a blast. And so I actually didn't mind cleaning up the trash. I do think it's hilarious that the guy that organizes, produces, promotes, and finances the entire thing is also the guy that has to clean everything up. But, you know, I mean, I don't think Bill Graham was sweeping up after the Grateful Dead shows, but what can you do? You know? and actually one of the bands said, hey, we're going to have to get food. You want to come with us? And I did want to, but I'm like, oh, I have things I have to do here, which meant sweep up, you know? And so it was an awesome, awesome evening. Everyone had fun. Nothing bad happened at all. There was no incidents, knock on wood. And all the bands were killer. The collaboration was, what, that, like, six collaborations? Like, it was awesome. And yeah. So I mean, of course, man, after every summer soiree, I'm like, that's it. That's the final one. I'm not doing it again. That's it. And I think I'm jinxing myself because now I'm at number 8. I'm so close to 10. I don't think I can stop before number 10, Eb. You know what I mean?
You have to make it, like, a nice, complete number.
Am I jinxing myself? Because ever since number 3, I've been saying this is the last one. And now I'm saying this is not the last one.
Well, if you start doing the this is the last one, then things will fall into place.
Well, I've actually already got the earliest ideas for Summer Soiree 9, and I'm going to send an email out to the prospective parties about that on August 18 or 19 for Summer Soiree 9, mind you. And if they say no, I've got other options, but that's going to be my first option. So I think I got to keep trucking at this point. I'm totally jazzed, but also, which was kind of cool, is a lot of the sponsors emailed me, and this, I've never had this happen before. They were like, yeah, we can't wait to do it again next year, which I've never had sponsors reach out to me and say they want to give me sponsorship. You know what I mean? Like, usually I email them and be like, hey, do you guys want to do it? I always soft sell. I'm like, hey, if you want to do it, that's cool. If not, I understand. And this is I had a lot of sponsors from this year say we definitely want to be involved next year. So that's helpful too, because with that spot, like, that sponsorship gives me some cushion to essentially pay for all the extras, you know, that really isn't covered by the ticket price, you know. Oh, also, Em.
Yes.
Pool noodles or balloons? What do you think were taken after the gig was over?
Pool noodles.
Oh, I'm sorry. Pool noodles or blow-up dolls?
Pool noodles.
All three blow-up dolls were suspiciously gone after
oh,
the
no.
gig. Which is funny. I mean, I wasn't going to use them, but I did think that was funny, you know?
That is very funny.
So, yeah, that's the tale. Summer Soiree 8. A little bit of chaos. Not a ton of chaos. I could actually even go with a little bit less chaos, frankly. But even so, an amazing night. Everyone, thanks to the band. And this one, between Schooly, between the Dwarves, absolutely killing it. Like they always do, but they really killed it this time. Between that, between the onstage collaborations, and between Schooly D being the wild card and just absolutely bringing an insanely mind-blowing show. I mean, this one was a 20 out of 10 grand slam. I mean, this one was killer. I mean, it really was.
That's so good. I'm so glad it went well.
Oh, thank
you. Sounds like a lot of fun.
It was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun. And like, it's very rewarding. It really was, you know. I mean, a significant amount of risk in that. Like, you know, for these kind of things, I have to put up non-negligible money. You know what I mean? Like real money, you know.
Right.
Like, honestly, for the amount of money that I put up, it's the amount of money that I might notice missing at the end of the year if it was a disaster, you know. So that's real money, you know. But I gotta say, man, I also have to thank the audience for having such a good time, and also the audience for like the audience was very. Sometimes you go to a gig and the audience just walks out. The audience thanked me, which was really cool. I mean, how often does a promoter get thanked for a show? Like the audience was very, very encouraging of the kids, there to have fun, and they thanked me and basically expressed to me that they really enjoyed it and appreciated the work that I put in. So it really was a magical, amazing evening, and it was awesome. It was awesome.
That's so good.
So, yeah, that was Summer Soiree 8. We'll see what happens with Summer Soiree 9. Oh, and also, Ev.
Yes.
I'm going to lock myself in now. I've already got my intro for Summer Soiree 10 in my brain. And it's going to change somewhat. Not 9, 10. 10 is going to be an ultra mega big blower, and 10 will be the final one.
Okay.
Maybe it'll be that bigger venue, a bigger venue. Here's the intro. And it's going to change somewhat. And I tried to do a smaller version of this before, but I couldn't get it to happen. So you know, I sell records, and I sell a fair amount of Kate Bush records. And I've listened to Kate Bush before, and I did not dig it. But for whatever reason, I was in a record store, and they were playing Kate Bush, and I kind of dug it. And so I actually got a Kate Bush CD for like $2. And I listened to Wuthering Heights. Do you know the song Wuthering Heights by Kate Bush?
I do.
Yeah, so honestly, a pretty awesome song. I bought it at Princeton Record Exchange. I literally listened to that one song all the way back from Princeton Record Exchange all the way to my house because I was enjoying it so much. And so that's where I got my idea for the intro for Summer Soiree 10. Here's what's going to happen, Em.
Okay.
3, 4. So Kate Bush's Wuthering Heights is going to start playing. 3, 4,
yes.
Or 5 ballerinas are going to come out on stage and start dancing to the song. And the dance is going to be kind of like a loose interpretation of Wuthering Heights and the ghosts and all the stuff in Wuthering Heights, you know. And I would like the ballerinas either to be kind of like little kids or what usually when we think of ballerina, we think of skinny white Russian girl. What if the ballerinas were what we don't typically think of a ballerina? What if they're people of color? What if they're women of color? What if they're drag queens? What if they're older people? You know what I mean? Anything unusual, you know what I mean? And so they're going to dance to Wuthering Heights, you know. Then near the end of the stage, I'm going to be carried out on a throne, and it's going to be like 8 like women rowers or 8 women bodybuilders like carrying me on a Roman throne, and I'm going to be dressed as Julius Caesar, right? And they're going to lower me down, right? And I'm going to get up, and the first thing I'm going to raise my hand like Caesar, right? And I'm going to say, I don't know if I'm going to do like Philly makes noise or whatever, but at some point I'm going to say, for those about to die, we salute you, right? Then I'm going to hold out my thumb, right, to the side.
Oh,
you know?
Sure.
And then it's going to like shake, you know? And then slowly I'm going to turn it down, you know? And the side doors are going to open up, and some kind of paper mache monsters are going to like run out with balloons, and that's going to kick off the beats of the show. And so bounce, New Orleans bounce was going to blast across the stage. And meanwhile, there's going to be 4, 6, 8 bounce. What do you call it when you shake your ass when you dance, Em?
Twerk?
Twerk. It's going to be like 8 twerkers or 8 break dancers. And it's just going to go crazy. And I'm going to like super hype up the audience. And then right before the first band takes the stage, I'm going to grab a boogie board from the stage, run out, and jump into the crowd on a boogie board and boogie board across the stage as Julius Caesar. And that's going to be the intro to Summer Soiree 10.
I like that. That's fun.
Or some version thereof. And during the night, for at least once during every band, something unusual or weird is going to happen. So, like, the whole thing is going to be like it's a cheesy word, but a multimedia interactive experience. Like, it's not going to just be sets. It's going to be like a whole thing, you know. Maybe the ballerinas will be between every band, but if at anything, after the last band, the ballerinas are going to take the stage again and do like a final 5-minute routine. What do you think of that, Em?
It sounds epic. I like it. So it's
that's
good.
Going to be that. I had the vision, Em. I had the vision, and that's going to be Summer Soiree 10. But before that, we got Danbert on October 18 in Philadelphia with Universal Girlfriend, and at night. And then there might be something around the end of the year. And then we got Summer Soiree 9. So that's what's happening then. That's what's happening.
All very, very exciting.
So that's Summer Soiree 8. So it was rad. And do you want to shut this bad boy on down, or do you want to hit some news, or do you want to talk about something else? What do you want to do?
I think we should keep it just Summer Soiree.
Well, there you have it. You can reach that podcast at punknews.org. If you didn't come to Summer Soiree 8, or if you didn't get the extremely limited Dwarves records, well, you kind of blew it, I got to say. I'm going to have some shouting fraud here, Em.
Okay, what's up?
You saw how heavily I promoted this gig. I mean, I promoted this gig pretty heavily, you know. And
very, yes.
All the fans were cool, and that they, like, retweeted, or not retweeted, re-Instagram stuff, you know what I mean? And I don't even say pretty sure. I'm positive. By the end, some bands were annoyed at my, you know, you can promote too much, you know what I mean? But it was a Thursday night, which is a tough night. You know, weirdly, Thursday night is like a tougher night than a Wednesday. Isn't that odd?
It is odd. I think because it's closer to Friday.
Friday and Saturday is the easiest. Friday's the second easiest. Sunday actually, well, Sunday's pretty tough.
Sunday's rough.
I think the next easiest is Wednesday. Then maybe Tuesday or Thursday, then Monday or Sunday. Sunday might be the toughest, honestly. So I know for a fact that some of the bands are getting kind of annoyed, so I appreciate them pitching in, but we sold out the gig. But the point being, Em, is, you know, for how many months, Em, was I like, you need to get a ticket. This will sell out. You need to get a ticket. Get a ticket if you want to go. I mean, how many times did I do that, Em?
So many.
What do you think happened the minute after it sold out?
More reposts?
No. People being like, oh, I meant to get a ticket. Can I still get in? Can I get it? You know what my answer was, Em? No.
No.
No. No. It's too bad for you. No. I didn't bother me because the show sold out. So I was on cloud nine. But this is not Bruce Springsteen where people are making $500 million. You know, this is a $25 punk show, you know. So it is helpful to get your tickets in advance. And frankly, if people were trying to get in and this and that, I'm sorry, no. And my door person, Ginger, I gave her explicit instructions. Aside from the guest list, no one gets in. No one. So, yeah.
I think that's smart.
I enjoyed that. Frankly, I enjoyed that. Because the fact of the matter is, people that tried to get in, they were all the kind of people that were kind of moochers anyways. And so I'm glad to deny moochers their mooch. You know what I mean?
I think so. Yeah.
So, anyways. So, yeah, same with that Summer Soiree 8. You can always visit the podcast at punknews.org. Em, any closing words or anything? And Em, are you going to come to Summer Soiree 9 or 10? What's the deal?
I would like to come to one of them.
You can be part of them. You can come on. You know, Summer Soiree 1 was Adam White and myself tap dancing and then jumping around the stage. That could be you. And honestly,
I would be up for it.
I'm going to drag you a little bit. It is like Summer Soiree 1 was insane because I had never thrown a show ever in my entire life. And I had this idea that Adam and I would come tap dance, even though neither of us actually know how to tap dance. We would tap dance on stage. There'd be an explosion, and then it'd be like you know, beats, and we would jump up and hype the crowd. And there's a significant chance of that falling very flat. You know what I mean? And so I commend myself for having the balls to do that, but I'm also concerned about myself in that I really had no reservations about doing that. You know, like it could have went horribly. It could have been Adam White and I going, everyone make some noise, and people standing there with their arms crossed, you know? Like when I did Wheel of Price is Wrong for at the low budgets, and everyone hated it, you know? It was
rough. Right.
But at that point, I'd been on stage enough, you know, and I'd done enough shows, like, it was rough, but I was able to just whack through it, you know? Whereas, you know, if Adam White and I get up there on stage in tuxedos and make jackasses of ourselves, and the people aren't into it, that's a rough 10 minutes, Em. That's a real rough 10 minutes. So anyway, Em, that jackass could be you at SummerSwing 9 or 10.
I'm always up for doing something kind of silly.
Do you know ballet? Fun. Can you be one of my ballet dancers?
I do not know ballet, but I can try.
I remember, actually, for Summer Soiree 3, I tried to get little kid ballet dancers just because I thought that might be neat that before World in the Front of Plays, like, these little kid ballet dancers come out and, like, do a five-minute routine or whatever. And I emailed some ballet schools, and I guess somewhat understandably, they actually were, like, all creeped out, and I was, like, trying to explain it to them. And they just, like, wouldn't get the idea. You know what I mean? Which I sort of understand, you know? And then I said, well, are there like any adult ballet dance, like, you know, like seniors or anything? And they just couldn't wrap their mind around it, you know? And I remember I said to them, I don't even know how much is a lot of ballet. Is like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, is 15 minutes? Is that a lot of ballet? And then I remember she got really mad. She's like, 15 minutes is a ton. That's a really long time. And I'm like, well, that's why I'm asking. Like I said, is 5 minutes long? Like, it just was a misfire, you know, but also, Em, something to consider is for Summer Soiree 10, I have to be sure to book a crowd that will be receptive to the ballet dancers. And too bad World Inferno is, World Inferno, that's like the perfect match, you know, but World Inferno is no longer around. Like, and honestly, like, if, like, let's say I did the ballet dancers with Dwarves and Schoolie D, I wouldn't, because to me, that's too risky, you know. But this crowd, it would have been amazing. They would have loved it, you know? So who knows? Who knows? Do you think my ballet idea is too insane, Em? Is that too insane or too weird?
Well, if you're going to treat it like this is the last one, you have to go all out, you know? So I don't think so. Like, the only thing would be maybe mix up the dance styles where it's the ballet portion is smaller, that... And then they just kind of go nuts.
Yeah, I think like 5 minutes is the exact amount, maybe even like 3 or 4 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I have to find – and like I don't even need like really good – I mean, I don't know good ballet from bad ballet. You know, I think there's got to be like some seniors group or something that does ballet, right? I mean, there has to be that, right? But I was having trouble finding it.
I would think so. I know, like, if you do it, like, professionally or even semi-professionally, your feet are, like, done.
Yeah, but I know for a fact that there are senior ballet dancers, because I actually saw, like, a documentary about some 95-year-old lady that still does ballet. But I know I can't afford – I mean, I think professional ballet is, like, very expensive. You know, I don't think I can afford that. So what I want is get, like, an amateur school or a hobbyist school. You know what I mean?
So, ooh, yes.
You know, like parents go to ballet recitals, and obviously, the kids are paying to be there. They're not paying to get there. So, can I get some kind of school to do essentially a short recital at my gig? You know, but then I understand, like, they don't know who I am, so they have to make sure the kids are protected. And it's not some weirdo, you know.
If you can get like older people, I'd say get older people.
I just think that would be like a really interesting cross culture collaboration, you know.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So I gotta figure out how to do it. So also I had my mariachi singer one time. That totally fell through. Like, I let my mariachi singer come, but I think he hates me because I had to cancel. Well, I didn't cancel the gig. Other people canceled the gig. So I think he's mad at me. But I would love to have him come back and actually do mariachi. So I
don't know. That'd be cool.
We'll see. I also wanted to have an opera singer do World Inferno, but I literally couldn't find an – I could not find an opera singer. You know, I mean, there's pros, but, like, that's going to be, like, $5,000. So I couldn't find, like, an opera singer in training or anything.
There'd have to be someone or, like, some group somewhere, you know?
I think I just have to keep looking at and look harder. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It shouldn't be – I would think that amateur ballet dancers and amateur opera singers would want an audience because, you know, because they don't have one. So to me, it's like – you know, to me, it's like the perfect synergy. But I was having trouble. Anyways, we'll see what happens in year – summer's already 9 and 10. But until then, September 6th, Philly Record Freakout. October 18, Danbert and Universal Girlfriend in Philadelphia, which is going to get announced at Punk News maybe tomorrow or this week. Anyway, Em, we will. When are we going to see you, man?
Next week.